Coming up next on The Balanced Word.
What's true for the nation of Israel? United we stand, divided we fall. It's true for all of us. It's true for us as a world. It's true for us as a nation. But it's true for us as a church, as a body of Christ. It's true for each of us in our families. It's true in a marriage. In every way, that modern wisdom that would lead to dividing, that would lead to tearing apart and ripping up, it's what destroys all of us. On the other hand, the advice of the ages, the wise advice of these counselors is something that we can learn from.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up, my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up, my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
So you're walking in the mall and see that person that really annoys you. So you choose to head off in the opposite direction. Or you know who pops up on your caller ID and you don't pick up. We struggle at times with responding as we should to difficult people, and at times it can lead to an all-out fight. So how do we get along with others, especially those that are different than we are? Today's balanced word will really serve to help us. Pastor Dave Rolfe will open up 2 Chronicles chapter 10 and offer up some needed biblical direction.
There's an old expression that says, united we stand, divided we fall. It's the state motto of Kentucky, but more than that, it goes way back. It actually, there were songs about it at the American Revolution. It's been kind of a uniting, rallying cry for Americans, but the quote goes all the way back to Aesop, the Greek philosopher, back around 600 BC. A lot of truth to it. United we stand, divided we fall. Ben Franklin said it this way, either we will hang together or surely we will hang separately. And it's true. As we divide, as we are ripped apart from each other, there's not going to be success, only going to be failure. On the other hand, if we can be united, we'll reach the full potential that God has for us. This is true of our world. It's true of our nation. It's true of our churches. It's true of our families and those of us with our friends. The children of Israel discovered this the hard way. God had established the kingdom of Israel, and finally, as David was their king, and then following him, Solomon, David's son, the wisest man ever in the world, the kingdom would be larger than it had ever been before or would ever be since. As God brought his people together, rallying around a worthy leader, and they were strong and invincible, no one could really touch them as long as they were united. But what happened next, as chapter 10 here is a turning point, the children of Israel became a divided nation, north and the south. It had always been a little awkward. You know, the capital was in the south, in the tribe of Judah. David and Solomon, they were from the tribe of Judah. Even before that, Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin, which was also a southern tribe. It's kind of like if you were a northerner when Jimmy Carter was president. You felt left out. Listening to all that hick music, and here all of a sudden Willie Nelson is some kind of an ambassador to the world, and you're going, what's going on here? Well, that's kind of the way they felt. It was, hey, most of Israel is in the north, and how come the south has Jerusalem, the capital? We all have to go down there to worship. Our kings come from down there. Hey, representation, you know, we ought to move it around a little. We ought to share the wealth, you know. And so, or as they said at the Boston Tea Party, taxation without representation is tyranny. This isn't fair. And so there was always that tension, but because the nation was so great under David, under Saul initially, David and then Solomon, people put up with it and they recognized it. But the event that happened right here in chapter 12 was the turning point of the nation of Israel. After this, they would be divided. It was north and south, two different capitals. In the south, their capital was Jerusalem. In the north, their capital became Samaria. Worship in the temple at Jerusalem in the south, but at Mount Gerizim in the north. And the once mighty nation ended up ultimately going through a series of failing kings for the most part. And finally, in the north, they were conquered by Assyria. In the south, they were conquered by Babylon. The whole unity of the nation fell apart, and with it, the nation was destroyed. But it all started here, the division, the ultimate tearing apart of this nation. And so beginning with, well, what was happening? Solomon died, and his son Rehoboam took over as king. But there was a movement in the north that was kind of inspired by a man named Jeroboam, no relation to Rehoboam. And so they got together to come down and to try to negotiate some sort of an improvement in relations with the south. And so in verse 3, it says, the people in the north sent and called for Jeroboam. And Jeroboam and all Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam and said, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now, therefore, lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." They were being taxed heavily. They were having to contribute a lot. And they were saying, "How about giving us a break?" And he said to them, "Come back to me after 3 days." Rehoboam obviously didn't have the wisdom of Solomon, and so he figured, "I better get some advice. So stay right here, and we'll be right back." And so he left, and he consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived, saying, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" Now think about it. These guys not only have the wisdom of being older, but they were advisors to Solomon, the wisest man in the history of the world. Now, if you could ever give advice to someone like Solomon, you must be something. But not only that, as they were there in the court of Solomon, they benefited from hearing all of his wise judgments. So the wisdom of experience, the education that came from associating with someone so wise, and the credentials of actually being advisor to the wisest person. And so that's a good person. That's a good group of people to ask. And so he said, "What do you think I ought to tell these people?" And these old guys spoke to him, saying, verse 7, "If you are kind to these people and please them and speak good words to them, they'll be your servants forever." But being young and knowing better than these old codgers, he rejected the advice which the elders had given him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him. He thought, you know, this is a contemporary problem, and it's going to require a contemporary solution. So let's find the cutting edge, the young bucks, the one who, you know, really have it going for them, all that. These old guys, you know, I don't know if I want to be like them. We want to improve things. So he goes, let's find out what the young, you know, people think. And so getting their advice, these young guys who he said, what advice do you give? How should I answer these people who are saying, lighten the yoke which your father put on us? And they said, here's what you ought to say. Your father made our yoke heavy, but you made it lighter on us? Well, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges. Their approach, play hardball. You see somebody, hey, Jeroboam's kind of leaning in over the plate, looking for an easy fastball. Dust him off a bit. Stick it in his ear. Back him off the plate. Take a hard stance, man. You give these guys an inch, they'll take a mile. Don't show any sign of weakness. Flex your muscles. Put them in their place. That was their advice. And it makes sense. Sometimes you think, yep, might makes right. What you need to do is, the best defense is a good offense. Just go for it. It may make good logical sense, but the wisdom that the elders had was much better. And it's the advice that God would give us today in so many circumstances and situations. So many times we have a choice. Which way are you going to go? Are you going to respond as the wisdom would tell you to respond? Are you going to go with cutting-edge technology and say, nope, let's just push them out of our way? We're in charge. They can serve us. Well, he took the wrong advice, and it divided the kingdom. It split everything that God could have done to where now it ends up, well, both sides lost. The north lost first, though, went into captivity way before the south did. Devastating. You know, it applies to us as well, though, because what's true for the nation of Israel, united we stand, divided we fall, it's true for all of us. It's true for us as a world. It's true for us as a nation. But it's true for us as a church, as a body of Christ. It's true for each of us in our families. It's true in a marriage. In every way, that modern wisdom that would lead to dividing, that would lead to tearing apart and ripping up, it's what destroys all of us. On the other hand, the advice of the ages, the wise advice of these counselors is something that we could learn from. See, we are always put in situations where we are dealing with people who are different than we are. And that's a problem. That's difficult. Oh, the world would be easy if we were all clones, if we were just alike. It'd be boring, but it'd be easy. We all thought the same things were funny. We all thought the same things were sad. We all had the same ideas to how to approach a problem. We thought so much alike that you didn't even have to talk. You could just read each other's minds. I know what you're thinking. But the problem is God puts us in a world that's diverse. And he places us in churches that are and in a nation that is. And so there's the potential for division. Oh, you remember when you first got married? You were amazed that God put you with someone who's so much like you. They're made perfectly for you. All your friends told you, you guys are so much alike, you're a perfect match. You're just, oh, the... And when they did premarital counseling with you, they started talking about if you have fights and things like that, you thought, yeah, I know, they have to say this for the other people, but for us, it's not that way with us. We're perfect together. And after you got married and you were married for a little bit, you looked across the table and go, who is this stranger? What happened? I married an alien, a foreigner. The same thing happens when you have kids. You carry that baby around and everybody goes, oh, he looks just like he has his father's nose, his mother's lips. And yeah, there are similarities. But then there are times when you look at that kid screaming or angry with you and you wonder, was this child really born from us? Or was it an alien baby that came ripped out of my side or something? There's such a difference. There's such a clashing that happens between us. And then we look at other nations and we go, how in the world could they think the way they do? They're not like us. And within our own nation, we go, well, I'm a Democrat. I don't know what makes Republicans tick, or I'm a Republican. What are those Democrats even possibly thinking? And so in so many different areas of life, here we are, we're planted here and we're so different. You know, on our money, it says e pluribus unum. In Latin, out of many, one. And that unity and diversity, it seems like a contradiction, and yet it's what makes life happen. It's the essence of who God is, actually, because the Bible says that God is a Trinity. Do I understand that? No. But I know from the very beginning, from the book of Genesis, it uses the word Elohim for God. That's a plural noun. And even in the passage in Deuteronomy, when it says, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, it uses the word echad in the Hebrew, which means a compound unity. And there too, the Lord our God, the word God, Elohim, a plural noun. And you go, what's going on here? It's unity within diversity. That's the way God's desired the world to be. That's the way he's designed our lives to be. That's the way marriage works. That's the way a church works. Unity and diversity. It's been something that historically was always elevated as one of the highest values. It's not just on our money. It's what education is supposed to be about. You ever wonder why they call it a university? Uni is one combined with diversity. It's because there's got to be a way for people who are different to find out how they are also one, to find out what we have in common. And so here in verse 7, let's go back and look at it again. Here's the advice of these wise counselors. They said, first of all, okay, you've got these people, they're different. Number one, if you are kind to these people, Kay Smith one time told me that the key to marriage isn't communication. She said, I think the key to marriage is kindness. If you could just be nice to each other, it's amazing how different people can get along together if they'll just be kind. It sounds so simplistic. But see, being kind, you know, that word kind comes from a word that means common. And we use the word, for instance, kindred. as meaning people you're related to. Kindness is knowing that you're connected to someone, knowing that you're related, finding those similarities. Over in Ephesians 4, when Paul talks about the nature of the church, how we all have different gifts, and yet we need to work together, he winds up that chapter. The last verse of Ephesians chapter 4 says, "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you." The greatest way in which we are related is because we've been forgiven. Because Jesus Christ gave his life for us. And he says, look, you have something great in common with everyone else that I've forgiven. And as a result, you should treat each other in a way in which you realize that you are kin. Be kind. Be accepting and understanding. You know, we use the word kind, well, in the Bible, in Genesis, as it talked about the different animals and the different species, it would say, after their kind. We use the word kind in terms of this kind and this kind and this kind. In Pidgin English, the slang language that they speak in Hawaii and other areas of the South Pacific, they have a word, they have an expression called dakine, D-A and then K-I-N-E. It's a twisting of the word the kind, and they use it now to refer to almost any time they don't know what word to use, they throw dakine in there. But traditionally, it was a word that meant that's the real kind. That's the good kind. That's the one that's valuable. And in a sense, that's what he's saying that we need to understand about each other, that we could see each other and say, there's someone who's special. There's someone to whom I'm related. That's the kind of person that I can understand. It only happens as we forgive, but forgiving is easy when you understand what you've been forgiven of. It makes you all in the same boat. It's when God forgives us and we forget that he's forgiven us, and so we just start thinking we're better than other people, that we begin to exclude others, and we begin to divide and to separate. And what happens with our comments? Well, they become unkind. They become unloving, unaccepting. It's so important for us to get this, that if we're going to get along with people who are different than we are, it starts with relationship. It starts with understanding that they are our kin. And as a result, we are going to treat them kindly. Just be nice. He goes on the second thing he says, and please them. The Hebrew word there that's translated please in our version is translated almost everywhere else in the New Testament as accept, A-C-C-E-P-T. It is to be accepting, but it's more than just that. It's saying that I accept others, but also that I act in such a way that I become more acceptable to them. And this is a key to getting along with people who are different than us as well. Okay, first of all, I need to look at you and say, this is the way you are, and I accept that. That's what one time Chuck and Kay Smith told me, that, you know, the first 40 years of our marriage was really rough. And then we just decided to quit trying to change each other. And it got a lot easier, and it was great. That's good advice for all of us to take. Do we just accept people the way they are? But accepting is only half the formula, because some things are hard to accept. And so we need to not only accept others the way they are, but we also need to be flexible enough to make ourselves a little bit more acceptable. Now, in a marriage, it works like this. I go, you know what? There are some things about you that are really driving me crazy, but I'm going to accept it. Oh, I remember one of the few faults that my wife, Ann, has is that she leaves her purse everywhere. It's just a natural thing. When she comes home from shopping, start calling all the stores and see where her purse is. And it used to just drive me crazy, because along with that, she also left doors open. Garage door open, I get called, hey, Dave, your garage door is open. You want me to close it? Yeah, okay. And at first, it made me tense. And I gave her those same lectures that her dad gave her about, you know, don't you realize we could lose everything we have? We didn't have much. It really would be a blessing. But, you know, and I realized, you know what? That's not going to change her. This is the way she is. And so I just quit worrying about it. So if you want to go over to our house after church, it's unlocked, I guarantee you. Doors are open. Follow Ann around, you can steal her purse easily. And yeah, we dealt with identity theft and everything else from it, but some things You just go, that's the way it is. Now, I look at my wife, and she's so sweet, and she's so loving to me, and she has so many good qualities. The fact that she doesn't know where her purse is, it's not that big of a deal, really isn't. I don't get stressed about it anymore. She does certain things. I realize I married Lucy, and it's just, that's the way it is. When our kids were younger and I Love Lucy would come on TV, they would run and turn off the TV. Lucy's on, and they'd run and turn it off because they thought that's where Ann got her ideas. True story. But when she married me, she discovered what a pig I am. And that I'm busy. I just left things lying wherever they were. I'm a man, you know, and that was the way it was. But I learned that things got a lot better when I started learning to pick things up. And so it's like, okay, I just knew she's a real neat freak. I could tell she's not going to accept me as being a pig. Maybe she should. That's up to God. But it's too late now because I'm not anymore. I can be a pig in my office, and I can be a pig in my car, and that's it. Other than that, I pick stuff up. Why? Because we have something in common. We're related. We're married. And a part of that is that, yes, I am to accept her just the way she is. She's to accept me just the way she is. I am. That was Freudian. But as we grow together, what happens is I not only just want to accept her, but as I accept her and I begin to understand what it's like to be her, then I think, you know, if I do this, it'll be more acceptable to her. And because I realize I have some things that are difficult to accept about me, there are some things about me that probably drive her crazy that I'll never be able to change. For whatever reason, that's me. But because she accepts me, then I want to become more acceptable. And that's really the advice that he's giving. Please them. It's not be a people pleaser, be a codependent kind of just, trying to satisfy everyone. But it's living our lives in such a way that on the basis of our commonness, on the basis that we are the same kind, then we begin to understand people who are different than we are and go, I guess it isn't all that crazy. There's a reason why someone might be that way. They might see the world in that way. And so I want to, as I think it's Stephen Covey who said, one of the most important rules is seek first to understand, then to be understood. And that would be the same kind of thing. Or put yourself in somebody else's place. You'll understand a little bit more what makes them tick, and you'll be able to accept them.
Hey, thanks for joining us today for The Balanced Word with our pastor and teacher, Dave Rolfe. We're going through 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and stay with us for more teaching from Pastor Dave. These programs are available by podcast at thebalancedword.com. Again, thebalancedword.com. We'd also like to offer you Pastor Dave's Through the Bible series on a USB thumb drive for a gift of $20 or more. Go through the Bible with Dave by ordering this special series today. Call 949-362-7475. Or go to thebalancedword.com. Your gifts help to make these shows possible on stations like this one all across the nation. So thank you for standing with us with either a one-time gift or ongoing monthly support. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Or again, call 949-362-7475. Have you seen Pastor Dave's one-minute messages? Watch and listen to those at thebalancedword.com and even join our mailing list, so you can have them delivered to you each day. You can also watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. We'd love to have you join us for a Sunday service at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our service times on Sunday morning are now at 8 and 10. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And you can watch our live stream there too, ccpacifichills.org. If we can pray for you in any way, we ask that you contact us through thebalancedword.com or call us at 949-362-7475. Let's get back to our message now on how to get along with others from 2 Chronicles chapter 10.
If you're going to have any friends, you're going to find that you need to accept people the way they are. Or all the candidates for your friendship. You ever been in the place where you really think somebody's a great person? and you start getting to know them, and then you just go, I don't know. I've had people do that with me. They say, oh, you know, Pastor Dave, he'd be fun to hang around with. They hang around me for a little bit, and they go, boy, I don't know. We're all like that. And if we can't learn to accept people who are different than we are, pretty soon we're not going to have any friends, because there isn't anyone out there who's just like you. And chances are, if there was, they'd drive you crazy. But beyond that also, to be a friend, you have to be willing to present yourself in such a way that's not repulsive.
We'll uncover more keys to getting along with people next time on The Balanced Word, as Pastor Dave Rolfe covers more ground in 2 Chronicles. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my soul.